Alright, time for LoseYouNotGod.com. Few presentation. Okay, yeah, that's right. So, very strange times. Probably a strange video. Strained, let's even say. Strained. Carefully worded. Nah, I'm not that careful. But I'm going to, in a sense, be edited, okay, by the circumstances, and just recognizing there's a magnitude to things, and blah 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 reactions. I don't want to muddy any water or screw any pooches. I don't want to make a mess of any kind. But I'm still here, still thinking, still making these points, and in this difficult context. So this is sort of like when some kind of priest who molests kids dies or something, and you could have this argument about, well, what's the eulogy, all the good work he did for widows and orphans versus raping the orphans. So it's it's unfortunate. But so what? It's always been a struggle, being controversial and saying something that, the majority doesn't like and all of that crap. And so, I'll do the best I can to, move things along without being too obviously too strained. like there's no pulp in the orange juice. So I had this idea of, you can't help but be triggered by the subject. So let's understand just a huge giant coincidence. I just happened, by somebody else's, random choice, to have seen, re-seen the movie, They Kill Horses, Don't They? And it has this perfect parallel to the incident that was related to the incident. So the incident has a backstory that has that almost exact story in it, which is so strange. Not exact, of course, but you know what I'm saying. Boyfriend being required to assist, in a suicide. So suicide is a really important subject for me. It's always been important. It was probably the first thing that really motivated me to try to be a spokesperson or an advocate for a subject. So I would argue the first thing I wrote about was the right to die, and the fact that it was an evil thing, okay, to oblige people to live a life, to live other people's values, their assumption that it's worth it, their claim that it is, their assertion. I mean, it's an aggressive assertion people are making, that you must understand how important it is that you consider every moment you're sitting here waiting to die as just a huge fun opportunity. For something horrible to potentially happen to you, and just all the tedium and the drudgery of existence. And as I have pointed out, I mean, I didn't need the philosophy to be exposed to any philosophy, in the sense that it was in my face, and I was an evolutionist by like 7 years old. At least I had known what the concept was, the word, and the basic concept, and I automatically saw brilliance in that observation, that this has nothing to do with any designing. It has nothing to do with purpose and function beyond this idea of make a copy and perpetuate it, okay, and then feed it with your dead your remains. The salmon was like one of, can't say at seven I knew about salmon, but it's probably pretty close. And it was probably pretty dramatic in a sense that, you know, the salmon are swimming up the stream and the bears are eating them and this and that. And they're doing all this stuff. They're deforming as they're going up the stream. Their whole body is turning into shit. Just to spawn and die. You know, it's just bleak. Just, you couldn't get a, you know. And then there was another example in a Jacques Cousteau. Okay, so that's how long ago. It was a long time ago. Watching it on black and white TV. Yeah, which is really, yeah. Anyway, you know, you miss so much when it comes to that whole underwater stuff. But anyway, you know, and these stupid fish, you know, that go on the high tide, they all swim, you know, dig a hole and spawn, and then they all just die. And, you know, zillions and zillions of them. And, you know, and the idea is that their rotten corpses will be washed up on the high tide. And so, when their eggs hatch, they'll be able to eat their parents. So anyway, so this is probably getting more like 10, 11, 12 kind of age. And, you know, this is the circumstance we exist in. And so I found my personal, emotional, social life to be unacceptable. And having this outside context of, oh, it's a shit-averse. You know, just any kind of shit can happen, averse. Whatever, I remember that was one of the first philosophical little, whatever can happen, can happen. And, you know, little things I wrote. And it's one of those statements that just stuck in my head as, this is what we're stuck in. It's, there's no obligation for good to happen. It's just an obligation for something to happen. So I hadn't yet converted that into some real understanding of recognizing the whole determinism of the physics and, you know, the fact that whatever this can happen is going to be, it was already decided at some point in the past. And, you know, you can go back. It was definitely decided a million years ago. And it was decided 100 million years ago and a billion years ago. You know, it was decided pretty far back because this system is doesn't have any poofing in it. There's nothing changing the basic dynamic of the cycling, the life and death of energy. You know, I can't even say it dies. It goes into big things, back into little things, back into big things, back into little things. Anyway, so I don't want to make a physics argument. Didn't even want to have to preface with all of this crap, but it's sort of relevant. So what I want to get to is two issues, okay? The idea that if you know, the idea that for our society it would be so much more constructive for these ideas of people who want to project this best future without any adversaries if they just allowed people to kill themselves. So if they left, you know, if they let a bunch of these people who are disgruntled, are, you know, of some negative opinion of the function of their wonderful systems, to gracefully exit, they would. And then they wouldn't have to, they wouldn't be obligated to endure their obnoxiousness sometimes, okay, or their anger at being forced to march the trail of tears. They'd rather not. So I could argue that I would be a long dead. So if they gave me the right to die at 10 years old, I would have taken it. So everything after 10 years old, there's no doubt about it. As soon as somebody said, here's the right to die, here's your little certified piece of paper, and here's a little stamp on it, you have a right to die gracefully, using the full capacity of medical technology. yeah, I'm in. Give me my ticket and let's go. And even if I didn't use it immediately, you know, there were times when, you know, there's better times in your life when it's not too horrible. And you could say, yeah, I can do this for a while. It's just the fact of having it takes away all that fear. And, you know, like I am right now, I'm stuck in a circumstance where I'm getting old enough. Yeah, I'm more than old enough to be blighted, to be attacked by the evil forces of deconstruction. And it'd just be so much more enjoyable if I knew, well, at any time, I can just get out of here. You know, I can just walk through the exit doors and I'm out of the bad smell. I'm out of the horror, the nastiness, whatever is going to happen, the fire. I have an escape. I don't have to be burned to death. I don't have to be poisoned to death. I don't have to be choked to death. I don't have to be brain tumored to death. Nothing. I mean, gigantic comfort. So, yeah, it appeases all of that blah, blah, anger thing. All right, so I was going to tell the story. Okay, you know, my mother related a story, you know, around the time that me and my sister were born, twins. She went a bit bonkers. You know, she went, you know, in 3 years, she had four kids. And it was all a little too much. And so she would have thoughts of driving off a bridge. You know, she had to travel across a bridge and just think about turning the wheel and getting out of here. All right, so they put her on Valium. She was fine. She became a perfect Stepford mother. You know, so that part of the story is not that interesting. But it was just the idea of it. Because, yeah, I mean, I lived, you know, those early years of being suicidal. I was angry that I didn't have a right to die. And I would contemplate driving my car into a church or something, or never contemplating running people over and all that kind of stuff, but just the idea of making some kind of statement with my death. And the thing that stopped me was mostly, to be honest, I wasn't sure it would kill me. And, you know, I really had no interest in, you know, being accountable, you know, and being punished or any of that. So, you know, if it wasn't going to kill me, I wasn't going to do it. And I'd argue that clearly, you know, thinking something, wishing it, imagining it, fantasizing about doing something is pretty far stretchy from actually doing something like that. So I could imagine that people could have such thoughts without actually there being much chance they were going to act on them. So I suppose I would put myself in that category. I wasn't much of a risk. I didn't start, you know, I thought about building a James Bond car, you know, with guns in the headlights and all kinds of, you know, all kinds of wacky shit like that. But I never tied wire one together to do it. So just, you know, this is one of the, I would just argue it's the liability. So I'm saying that I'm sure I have read of some of the, many of these cases, let's just say many of these cases of people that do extreme things in extreme anger and hostility, were people who had contemplated suicide, if not attempted suicide. And so the very idea that you could escape all of that trouble if you just gave them the graceful exit, then they wouldn't first have to come up with some other way to kill themselves in some horrible way. And they wouldn't have the notion that, oh, let me use my death to go harm somebody else, to make them pay for their inappropriateness, you know, to do something vengeful, revengeful. And so that's the problem with immaturity and hate, I would argue, because, yeah, I had a lot more of that. And again, this is, you know, you could be, you know, you can be 25 years old or 23 or 27, and you can still have pretty immature emotional drives perception. So I could argue that I don't know when I stopped entirely thinking there was any utility in making a statement. And I suppose it was partly because I started to realize the whole idea of civil war, you know, the context of war itself and a fair fight, and you know, that nobody really has, you know, if you're gonna have this idea of free speech and you have this idea of a political atmosphere, if all that matters is how big is your bullhorn, you know, that's a useless system. So who can threaten, you know, who can do the most threatening thing, the extortion, you know, the pay attention to me or else, that shouldn't decide who has speech. But as a defense of against the idea of censorship, you know, where your speech is suppressed, and I'd argue that the arguments against religion have always been suppressed, and not given the fair opportunity, you know, I'd argue that now things are a little better, but they're going back the other way in the sense that right now I'm starting to feel like I have to be censored, that I have to control every, you know, be careful with the nuances of these words, because there's all these agents that wish to find some excuse, you know, some, and that's all it would be, an excuse to turn it off, to censor it. You know, YouTube's just waiting. Just go one little inch too far so I can justify hitting a button. So there is some reason to argue that some subjects have to be defended aggressively. But that's an interesting subject. And so then you go to things like, you have so many examples of how, you know, you could look at the Gaza Strip and you could say, well, that was a brilliant plan by Hamas, right? They had a really great plan, for extorting attention from the world. And, that really worked well. Their previous plans all failed, too, it seems to me. So, I mean, yes, you're allowing the world to see Israel in not a very good light, in the sense that they look like assholes for, you know, not giving a shit about collateral damage. And, well, we don't give a damn. We have to kill a few kids, so what? So they look pretty bad. But frankly, you can't advocate for, when you're all dead. So after you've been exterminated, it's probably a little too late, to say, boy, we should show the world how bad they are, and you're not around to enjoy the good of it. So I'm just saying that, you know, I think if Lincoln knew how bad the Civil War was going to be, he would have tried something else. And I think the South likewise would have said, gee, our strategy didn't really work very well. We should have waited another year till we had our own Navy and we had this and we had that, you know. But that's the whole thing, right? Because those things seem like attacks, you know. So if the South starts building itself a Navy, well, maybe we have to have the Civil War now, okay, because if we wait a year, we might lose it, you know, that kind of thing. So there's all kinds of horrible strategy that has to be considered, and all of that other crap. Now, in this subject of making arguments on the internet, obviously I've argued, well, you just make arguments on the internet. There's no other, you don't throw, you know, because you're a vegan, you don't throw blood on people's stuff, and you don't embarrass them in public, and you don't do anything else to jeopardize. You don't destroy property. You don't do any of that crap, because it is a kind of extortion. Just not only extorting through fear, but extorting, in just this, like, pay attention to me way, in this way that says somehow you must listen to me, okay? And my voice is more important than your voice or their voice. And yeah, that just doesn't appeal to me at all. So I've become, I attempted to create a political party, and I called Fairness First, because I am sort of really focused on this idea that, well, if deserve doesn't have anything to do with it, what's our job as civilized humans is to make deserve have everything to do with it. So the whole idea is to, yes, deserve is a great thing, so let's spread it around. Let's have lots of deserve. Good stuff. So I'm just throwing this in context, is that, all of this is so... I'm just saying, if the right to lifers could undo history, okay, and I would have killed myself at 10, I'm arguing they would probably be going to be better off, in terms of the propaganda war or this or that or some other thing. So if you're advocates, you give them some way to not be, if you appease them. Then they don't sign up for the Civil War. You give them some kind of bargain, okay, that is an offer they can't refuse in the positive way. So instead of a horse's head in the bed, you have a, four hookers with a bunch of gold coins glued on them or something. you entice them with some... seductive thing that distracts them away from being motivated to be a pain in your ass. So if civilization wants to get rid of a bunch of dissenters and problem and troublemakers, let them commit suicide, then you're done. You got nothing to fear from them anymore. So it's just one of the ironies of these kinds of circumstances is... that the more they push against and force people to get more angry and more frustrated and more irritated and more blah, blah, you build up their resentments, give them more, more of those little jabs. You're only asking for it. Okay. So I would argue that it was a bunch of school shooters and this and that, and all of these people would have been dead if they could have gotten out when they were just in the mood to get out and not in the mood to make the motherfuckers pay for it. Okay, so it's a great mitigator against rage. Okay, is to give somebody the opportunity to just get the fuck out of your shitty house. Okay, but if you force them to stay, you're just asking for what you get. Okay, so I just think it's a really, there's lots of important arguments to need to be made in this context, is that none of this ever just happens. It happens always for reasons, and there's all kinds of psychology involved, blah, 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 blah. But I would argue that in all of these cases, it would all be mitigated by a right to die. A rational recognition that you don't have a right to tell somebody what their life means. They have a right to define that. Now, obviously, structuring one is complicated a little bit, so I guess I'll go into a little of that. So I've talked about it in previous videos years ago, went through this whole thing, and which all you just need is like a 6-month waiting period. But as soon as you're of an age, you get to say, I would make it 16 or something. I'd make it even younger if the parents co-sign, okay? Because I think parents can recognize when it's just not working for their kid. Have some empathy. It's time for a do-over. Because this one's a clunker. But you just basically register the fact that you're of the opinion that dying is not a spiritual event. You know, it's not none of God's business, and that I'll do it when I, at my judgment, should be the default judgment of when the right time is, not anybody else's judgment. And you basically just register to have the right to at any time acquire the technology to gracefully exit. And so as long as you're registered and you've been registered for 6 months at any time, and then at any time where you say, gee, I must have been crazy to think I had a right to kill myself, and you want to revoke it, you revoke it. And then you have to, like I said, re-sign up. You have to wait another 6 months. So you can't play a game with pretending this isn't a philosophical statement you're making. If you can't figure out what kind of universe you live in and how it works, well, then I guess you'll be stuck vacillating. But for people like me who are confident, and we're always confident, and have never seen an inkling of evidence that they are wrong in their perception that my life is mine to have to endure. I'm the only one who feels my feelings and must endure my experience, and it's really nobody else's fucking business. It's to tell me I'm obligated. It's simple enough. And I'm arguing that for a lot of people, just having that backup, just having the understanding that they're not going to be in some impossible circumstance, that there always is a way out, will give them a lot of, they'll make them more productive, less likely to be an alcoholic or a lot of other things, be a lot less stressful. They'll live a much better life and probably a longer one. And so it's win, 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 win. Kind of thing. It takes nothing away. So the people who don't think anybody should be able to kill themselves, they can still live by that law. You know, they can still, it can still be illegal for them, you know, if that's the way they want it. But they have no right to make it illegal for somebody else, or to deny me to use medical technology in what I consider to be my best interest. And it's not in my best interest to get chemotherapy and surgeries and all that kind of crap. It's in my best interest to, when it's time, to die gracefully. And it's a really important thing. And for a lot of my life, it was almost every day's waking thought. Was the sense of being trapped by this evil, pro-life crap ideology. They believe in a God, and they believe they should mind their own business and just take care of their own soul and get it to heaven, and yet they're redoing God's design and forcing people to be obedient to it, as if God couldn't take care of that himself. God said he'll take care of who goes to hell, who goes to heaven, who's good, who's bad. It's not your job. All right. So, it's like the fetus thing with the abortion. I mean, obviously God doesn't, God doesn't care whether you were, he's not going to mistreat you because you were killed in the war or this happened or that. That's irrelevant. God doesn't, your own ideology doesn't allow for you to presume that God isn't paying attention. And so fetuses being aborted wouldn't mean anything. God can't fix that? Yeah, God can fix that. So let him fix it and quit pretending you know better and you have a right to tell other people what they have to perceive and see, what the facts of life are. So that's really what it's about. So clearly that's what exists in this circumstance, is this huge disagreement among people about what the facts of life are. Okay, what are the facts running our universe? And when you get to the subject of value, those disagreements are substantial, and you can't get more meaningful. People will go to war over those ideological notions, and the truths are so divergent. They're exact opposites. Love is hate. Fun is torment. I mean, they're exact opposites of each other in terms of the extremes of our disagreements. Good is bad kind of crap. That's why you make videos and you have arguments, is to try to minimize the cavern of difference in that understanding and find some ground, where a compromise, where you haven't compromised the substance. Right. That's the beginning. Not the beginning I was imagining, but I saw some sort of transition. What I'm trying to do is go from this idea of, suicide, and get it to the idea of when do you have a right to impose, when does a group have a right to say, we're the good guys and we're now going to have a civil war, that kind of thing. Under what circumstances are you allowed to be a freedom fighter? I'd say it's a little nuanced. And I'd certainly say again that I side on the fact that to stay a civilizationalist as long as you can before you become we have to violate civilization to rebuild civilization or something like that. I mean, you just don't want to go there. It's a last resort, war. Okay, that kind of statement. So I'll be back and such. All right, back. Okay, so I want to get to the trolley problem, okay? Because in this context, it's kind of does provide this example of a dilemma, where you have to measure the value of the social contract versus the facts, and the facts pointing to the outcome will be better if the social contract is ignored. When is it appropriate to recognize you can't throw out the baby to preserve the bathwater in this case, which is just a silly notion of a social contract. It's a synthetic thing. And all that really matters is the do part, not the try part, not any other part. The outcome matters. And if you have reason to be certain about that outcome, and it's very good reason, then shit, it's a hell of a dilemma. So let's understand that this incident thing, very bad, all that, but, no targeted sufferables were involved in the sense, so very, speeders killed more people today, obviously drunk drivers did, lots of things harmed more of humanity today, than this high-profile incident of terrorism. Sorry, it's just, it's not exactly what it was. It was activism, pointlessly poorly done, you could argue. All right, anyway. I mean, what if it was, what if there was a suicide bomber who just showed up with a bomb and then committed suicide and didn't explode the bomb, but just pointed out, I could have made a terrible mess. Could have cost you, $1 million and caused a bunch of limbs to fly off of people and horrible things to happen. I could have done that, but I didn't. Now, it's a lot more respectable, but it's still obnoxious. It's still saying, I get to talk, you don't. My voice gets to be louder than yours because I'm willing to impose on you. I'm willing to say I'm more important than you. You know, you have to do the hard work of making thousands of videos, eking, squeaking, trying to be heard, blah, 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 blah. You know, I'm going to shortcut. All right. And so that's the... So yes, it, you know, people see this, and I see, but, you know, but you cheated. It's cheating. That's the biggest problem with this. It's cheating. You're not allowed to cheat. You have to make your argument. You have to win your argument. It's a debate. You don't do this in a debate. Anyway, to get to the trolley thing. So here you can create a dilemma. So let's just say, okay, the standard one is fat guy on a bridge, and there's five people on a railroad track, and there's a train, you know, a trolley coming, so it's not a big train. And it's enough if the fat person falls on the track, it'll stop the trolley and save the five people. So the simple argument is if I can make the five people perfect people and I can make the fat guy a child molester. Okay, I could do lots of things. And at what point are you going to be, you know, provoked to do this unpleasant thing of sacrificing somebody, imposing? So you could argue that, well, what if I changed it? You can ask him, you know, to just do it. You know, you have enough time to explain to him the physics and say, come on, do the right thing. And, you know, I could give him cancer and he's going to be dead in 3 months, right? So I can create lots of circumstances. And so what if I make it one guy and 5 million? You know, then it gets easier and easier to see the logic of it and the obligation of it. And to say, I'm not going to act because I have a principle. And the principle just means the worst outcome happens instead of the best outcome. That's all the principle, that's all your devotion to the principle will mean, is the outcome sucks. And to me, that's unsatisfactory. So you have to find some other solution to this dilemma than to say it's either all in or all out, you know, and recognize that, damn, what is the standard? When can you be confident that the right thing needs to happen and you know what the right thing is? And so in this context, it's obviously hard for me to make this argument that somehow it's wrong, okay, for people to be... to find it really repugnant that people are torturing animals in concentration camps, and that even more repugnant that they're making some circle of life little silly story up about how nature's all wonderful and charming when it's mass murdering children. So I was thinking of the slavery argument as a good example. In the sense that clearly there was people in the South who were in this dilemma. You know, there's a death penalty for hiding or facilitating the escape of slaves. There's a real threat, and just the fact that it's against the law, society, your civilization says no. The social contract says you cannot be, okay, a person who believes this or invests in this or acts as understanding that what that civilization is doing is plainly wrong. You're not allowed to think it even, you know, almost. And you're certainly not allowed to act on it. And so that's a terrible dilemma. And people actually gave their lives because they knew it was wrong and they had to do something. So were those people right or wrong? And, you know, I would clearly argue they're right. And because history says so, right? So that's the whole problem, right? They're only right if you really do confidently understand that owning people is a shitty thing to do. I'm a bit of a computer glitch. Anyway, right in the middle of a very important point. So who says the, what's right? So I'm just saying it's a pretty long reach for anybody to say that those people weren't right to fight slavery, that they weren't right to have a civil war, that it would have been a better outcome, okay, if they let it drag on, that if millions of more days of life were experienced with people in those horrible circumstances. Obviously, yes, it's a bad transition. So you could argue the Civil War was just so expensive for both sides and such a degrade of our social infrastructure that it ruined the whole 50 acres and a mule thing. It just ruined the whole idea of being able to transition to a society where the slaves were fairly integrated into civilization. But anyway, so it's just an example. I'm just saying you can come up with a million examples of little events that take place where, a decisive moment and, the outcomes are dramatically different if it didn't happen. And you could argue World War II, you could argue all of the wars that ever took place. And what ifs about whether they delayed it or they had it later or blah, blah, blah. And it's an impossible dilemma. But I'm just saying that you do know that you have to say, even if it was random, 50-50 in terms of good decisions, bad decisions, you have to know that the outcomes definitely are different. And it's a gigantic stake. There's a huge amount of value at stake. And so just recognizing that is a very heavy weight. So, I mean, I feel it in my function doing these videos for the last, I didn't feel it in the beginning because I was, just fighting to find my place in this environment. But as I'm recognizing that I'm the orator and the composer of this in some sense, that it's somehow important that I write these notes in the right order because the whole symphony won't work somehow if I don't do that. That there is some pressure, there's a lot at stake and, I don't want to fuck it up and, and I don't want to be, I could have done another 10 minutes and it would have been a great video. I should have taken that 10 minutes to think about it. Because what's at stake? Oh, well, the welfare of trillions of sentient organisms. Oh, is that all that's at stake? Oh, shit. Fuck. And so to get back to the subject of the psychology and the way people try to find escape routes and ways of shortcutting, mine is, boy, I sure wish somebody would show up and say, well, we're just going to torture you for a million years and we'll give you everything you want. Okay, in terms of the nice and peace and quiet in the universe, you get to rescue all of the slaves, and in exchange for we torture you for a million years, and I'd take the contract because frankly that's it's more certain, it's cleaned up. I don't have, there's no pressure. Yes, I get tortured for a million years, but I know it's only one sentient organism. I know by comparison it's a huge advantage. I've just rescued, just this gigantic number of terrible events, all kinds of things being eaten alive and all kinds of horrible things happening. And, but it's a shortcut, and it doesn't exist as a shortcut. Okay, so that's the sucky part. Is this shortcut is really impossible. So where some other shortcuts are conceivable, this shortcut isn't. So that's another thing I thought of when I was in younger days, and it was a different world, was a hunger strike. I said, I'll go on a hunger strike. But it was just starting to become where people were encouraging people to jump off of roofs, you know, where the whole idea of suicide was starting to mean absolutely nothing to society in general. And so hunger strikes were just going out of vogue in the sense that it just didn't work anymore. People would just bet on when you were going to die. How many pounds will he weigh when he's dead? And they would, you know, bet on it. You know, that's all. So it was just like, oh, shit, okay, I can't do that. You know. But again, it's cheating. It's just some way to try to find a way to die that isn't too horrible and might as well do something for the cause in the process. And obviously, that's sort of a sensible thing, okay? But again, there it's rules of civilized rules, and you're still stuck with either it's cheating or it's really stupid and excessive, or you know, something else. It's a, you know, it comes down to it's a very delicate thing you're playing with. So you could argue that Gandhi, in India, you know, at first I believed the story, you know, and it's how, oh yes, he's what a nice guy. But then you find out, not so nice. I mean, he used people as fodder. You know, he fed them to the British, you know, as, you know, stuff to shoot at. You know, in some notion that, well, it's worth it in the long run. You know, in the long run, it'll be worth it. And you're saying, well, that's, I mean, when it's not your ass that's getting the shot, and it's not, you know, then it becomes, yeah, is that better than suicide bombing when you, you know, basically engineer, a system of picking the losers and forcing them to be the fodder for the road you're going to build to your future? Yeek. This isn't as simple as some people want to make it all. Okay, so I just wanted to do some talking on that, and then I want to just make this separation between the only time I've ever talked about doing a violence, and it isn't violence in my opinion. Obviously, it's no more violent than shooting a lame horse. It's, you know, it's not an act of violence. It's an act of mercy. So, you know, it's just a lie to call it something else. It's a lie to describe it the wrong way. That's inaccurate in not in just its incompleteness, but in its elemental, you know, you got it backwards. I mean, it's just a fact. You have it backwards. So the only point where I talked about this whole nuke thing, okay, was in the idea of there's no other solution pragmatically for nature to be sterilized. There's just, you know, it's, you've got to do something dramatic, and the current occupants have to pay the price for paving the road to that much better future. And it's just a fact. There's probably no way around that. So that was, it's just a pragmatic statement regarding the limitations of practical application of technology and physics. So you're just stuck with some physics that just won't yield. Some biology and chemistry and ultimately physics. Just fact. And then in the context of the trolley problem, where, if the button was sitting here, I haven't got any... There's so much at stake. There's no way I can just say, well, buttons are out of the question. I can't, you know, no buttons. No one's allowed to hit any buttons. No buttons allowed. No, you just can't do it. There's too much at stake. And it's so obvious to me that from my personal character sense, I just can't see how there's any other possibility than my hand goes like that. I just can't see how there's any other possibility. I'm just expressing my point. I can't see how I evade it. Because I see it, you can't lose anything, and all you can do is gain. And you can gain so fucking much that there's just no way you don't hit the button. There's no way you don't gamble. And like I said, I'd gamble with my own welfare if I could. If I could give the contract before I hit the button that if I'm wrong, I get severely punished. I accept that. Because, frankly, so again, it's just this idea of when is confidence that's earned and deserved. And I'm just saying I've spent 65 years immersed in the subject of the meaning of existence. And I can't see it any other way than that huge rescue. You know, all of that harm prevented is just... And there's just no way I could see it any other way. So I'm just saying, that's me. I'm not saying you have to agree. I'm just saying I can't help but know that I would do something. I wouldn't just sit there on the bridge and just fold my arms and say, well, gee, life sucks that we have to watch these dilemmas and not do anything. You know, because you know, we have a big brain, but we can't do anything with it because we can never be sure our brain works. So we have no right to invest in anything. I mean, that's just ridiculous. People do it all the time. All the time our democracy comes up with some stupid answer. Like supporting wars and, you know, giving people guns and bullets and all kinds of stuff to make trouble. Jesus. Anyway, so... This is sort of the video I did intend to make a video about suicide and the trolley problem. And I know the two are connected, and I just really didn't do a perfect job of that. But again, it's this whole atmosphere that I'm making this video in that makes this a little more complicated. So I will maybe go over my brief notes and see if there's something that triggers me to say, oh, I left that part out. Because I don't think I did so far, but anyway, I'll check. No, I didn't see anything glaringly missing. There was one little mention that just the idea that, you know, just the backstories to a lot of these people that do these wacky things that the school shooters all never understand what the hell that fucking bullshit's about. I have just no idea. It seems so counterproductive. I don't know what cause you could possibly defend in terrorizing children. I just don't get it. But anyway, paralyzing them, doing some horrible, you know, just awful. Anyway, you know, just, ooh. but, you know, some of that's precipitated by just these stupid events, okay? Like one of them was, you know, his mother was going to move and he'd have to move and he didn't want to move. And that provoked his... having to do something. So it's always that kind of crap. And it seems like that's the crap they don't get to. Like, they never figure out that, you know, these people who are in trouble need to feel secure. And there's very little about the system that creates any sense of security. Clearly, they're just put in some jeopardy of being thrown into the nut house and being done this and having these things, these institutions attack them rather than provide them some sense that the system cares and the system is going to try to, you know, help you feel okay. And again, one of the biggest ways to make them feel okay is to make them feel secure in their capacity to just gracefully walk to the exit and say, okay, I don't really get you people. I'm going home. You know, and that's all you have to do. That's the easiest way to just you know, take all the, just let all the pressure escape, and you know, take the air out of the bad bubble. So I just wanted to throw that in. Okay. So as has already been stated, it's, you know, this is a simple enough philosophy. It's just saying that, you know, there's sentient organisms on Earth. Most of them exist in this natural circumstances container. And the natural container is a meat grinder that just basically kills everything. And it kills some of them a little bit slower than it kills the others. And sometimes it gives them a lot of diseases and miseries before it finally kills them. So it might kill them more than once, sort of. And that's it. There's nothing, you know. Almost got eaten by a lion today. You know, live another day to be almost eaten by a lion. You know, that kind of thing. A lot of stress and torment. And most of it just, you know, all of it ending in some sort of deconstruction. You know, so it's just dancing on the quicksand, and that's life, and it's stupid. And nothing should be obligated to do it, and especially intelligent things shouldn't be obligated to do it, because they're not going to enjoy it at all, because they don't even get the whole dancing part. So anyway, I guess that's enough of a video. So, and yes, it is a weird. It's just, things just get weirder and weirder. And, yeah, I don't know. Who knew this is where things would go? I would not have predicted this is 2025. And it's such a plastic, like one of those plastic faucets. It's just such a plastic faucet. It's just so, why bother? You know, it wasn't worth the time to install. It's just, no. Try something else. Anyway, I don't know. So, yeah, so there. So, till the next time, when I'll say some more stuff about some more stuff and such. Yeah. But, Okay, yeah, I wish I had tied the things together a little better, but I had an idea that I could have done that, but I just, you know. But anyway, it's close enough, I think. And again, it's in this environment where you feel censored. Yeah, so I feel censored. And it's just, it's difficult to make videos in that environment. So, but, you know, I understand the circumstances. Extraordinary. So I have to accept, you know, that I have to walk through this trickier maze and such. All right, so till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. Enough.